5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. It's me, Stephen Scott. I'm back with you again. Yes, they let me come back. And I'm at home with the most ridiculous and horrific noise going on behind me. I have no idea what is going on outside today as we put this show together. With me, though, hopefully in somewhere a little bit quieter, is Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet. Hi, Robin.
Hi, it's me. And we've chosen to start recording when the recycling van truck lorry is making its slow way down our street as well.
Well, I don't know what they're recycling outside my house, but it sounds awful, whatever is going on. It sounds like the beginning of a horror movie, to be honest, or at least the end of a horror movie when it's all got really bad. Also with us, hopefully somewhere even quieter, although I do believe you live in a city centre, so possibly not. Andy Wynn is here. No, they called you Andrew again, but we'll call you Andy.
Hi, yes. Well, I think the postman's already been, so you're not going to hear him buzzing my doorbell. So, it should be quiet from here on in.
You're in the penthouse.
Doing this?
I'm in the penthouse, yeah.
Right above the noise of the city down below.
I'm on the mezzanine.
It's quite nice. Yeah, it's quite nice. You can open the window and, close it again. But, yeah, it's joys of a city. Anyway, okay, let's get into the show this week. We've got lots and lots to talk about. The noise has stopped. Marvellous. Bet it kicks off again in 2 minutes. Right, anyway, let's get into the show this week. We've got so much to talk about. And in particular, we're going to be talking about an email which came in to kick off with, anyway, to talk about Braille books. So, Andy, we're going to kick off with an email because this opens up our first conversation today.
Yes, this first one is from Will. Hello. Just a heads up. RNIB are giving free SD card with 700 titles on it, some in grade 1 and 2, though, so I guess not fully 700 titles of books formatted in Braille-ready format to be read on an Orbit reader. For free! Just contact the helpline to receive. The card also contains the manuals, again, for the Orbit, so it can replace the card that ships with the unit. You also get the Bible as a reference book on it in two versions, the King James and the New International Version. So, yeah, that email has come from Will.
Yeah, now that sparked a bit of a conversation because when I got your email, Will, I thought, right, hang on a minute, what is going on here? I didn't know about this. I hadn't heard anything about it. There was no promotion of it that I was aware of. So I contacted the RNIB Talking Books Library and spoke to its head, James Bartlett. He told me that this was something which was being offered whilst the Braille Book Library was closed. Now, the Braille Book Library, the lending library for physical Braille books, has now reopened, although obviously getting those books out and making sure they are safe is a big concern for them, so it's all a bit slow, and certainly a lot slower than it used to be. But he was very keen to know what the response would be if this was something that people wanted, you know, if this was something that you might actually be interested in. Now, if you have an Orbit reader, or you have any Braille display for that matter, you can get this SD card, 700 books on there, and you're able to enjoy them all in, as Will says, in grade 1 or grade 2 Braille, depending on, I guess, the machine. I'm not entirely sure if the machine can translate Braille on the fly. I'm waiting to get some answers on that one, because I don't know. I know other devices will do that, but I'm not sure if the Orbit reader will do it. But I just wanted to tell you a quick story about this, because in speaking to James Bartlett, he was very keen for me to point out and give a nod to James Bowden at RNIB. Because James Bowden is the guy, the one person who has been working through those 700 books individually on his own, devolumizing these books, which means essentially when Braille books are created, if you don't know, because I know you won't really understand this, Andy, but Braille books are essentially created in volumes, because you can't have just one volume which is a book, because it's so big that it would just span too many pages. You'd never be able to lift it off the floor. So what they do is they volumize the books so that you can have, say, a single book of Harry Potter, for example, might be, I don't know, 10 volumes, say. So what someone has to do is devolumize that.
Yeah.
And then they've got to basically take those 10 books and turn them into one file that you can then read. So it's a lot of work to do. And of course, over 700 books, that's a lot of work. So, a big nod to James Bowden at RNIB for doing this and making these books available. You can call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. Tell them that you use a Braille display and that you would like access to the SD card with the 700 books on it, and that will be sent out to you. It's a fantastic idea, and it might... I have got some rumours. Actually, more than rumours. I've got information about this, but I can't tell you everything. But what I can tell you, I like knowing things and you don't know them. But I know that if this is popular, there's more of this to come. Let's just say that.
It seems to be a much more efficient way of getting Braille out to people if they have a Braille display, because the sheer resources of shipping out all of those volumes. I mean, obviously, if people want hard copy, fantastic. That resource is still there. But yeah, if you can gradually move over to this, the more people have Braille displays, the better, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because James Bartlett made this comment to me as well. He said a lot of people think that because we're moving to e-Braille, that we're not interested in doing hard copy Braille anymore at RNIB, and that's not the case. So if you want hard copy Braille, you can have it. If you'd rather have it in e-Braille, you can have it. Basically, it's just opening up the options, really. That's what it's all about. And I think it's great. So yeah, I'm going to order one because I'd like to get some of those books. The Bible is probably one of the most requested ones. So of course that's going to be on there. And the Orbit manual's on there. Now, how many people have got their Orbit reader and probably accidentally formatted the SD card that comes with it, which has got the manual on it? Well, now you can get it back. So yeah, I think it's really good. I'm really, really pleased about it. And well done to James Bowden as well at RNIB for doing that.
I hope he's taken a well-deserved rest.
Yeah, he's having a couple of weeks off.
No, I called that number this week because I said last week that I would call them about you-know-who, about Hamish Macbeth and the gaps in the reading services library. So yeah, I called that number and I'm a bit sad now because what they said was that even though they're available... they're all available on CD and USB. Only the 7 out of the 30-odd that are in the Easy Reader app are going to be there. It's not a question of them filling in the gaps. She pretty much said that's your lot, I'm afraid. And it's to do with rights, which is a real shame if that is the case. But it does seem a bit weird. A random 7, all by the same publisher, are only available in digital. Why those 7? Maybe they started off putting those ones in and then the rights got yanked away. I don't know. But yeah, that's my little update. Hamish is going to be patchy in the extreme on the Easy Reader app, guys, if you do decide to go there. If you're a Hamish Macbeth fan rather than an Andy McNab fan.
Yeah, although we have to be clear on this, because Andy McNab's a writer.
Yeah, and Hamish is a character. MC Beaton has also done another series of books called Agatha Raisin and the Quiche of Death is the first one. They're good too. So MC Beaton versus Andy McNab.
She's no longer with us, is she? Fight it out, bare
knuckle fighting.
She's no longer with us, MC Beaton, is she?
No, very recently passed away.
Yeah,
but she's written over 100 books, very prolific. Yeah. Mm.
Okay, well, this has turned into Read On, our book show here on RNIB Connect Radio. Let's move back to Tech Talk. Let's talk about Narrator then, because I promised you this week that I was going to spend some time actually with Narrator. Instead of just talking about it, instead of slamming it for not being the screen reader we all hoped it might be, I thought I'd spend some time with it. But interestingly, we did ask you, dear listener, to get in touch with your experiences of Narrator, because I did say last week, I wonder how many people out there are actually using it. Who's using this? And you have come back with your comments. I'm going to save mine and because I'd rather hear your comments because you've been using this more than me. So let's go to the email inbox here for this segment and talk a little bit about the emails that we've been getting about Narrator, Andy.
So we'll start with...
Where's the jingle? Jingle.
I will get the jingle later. This is not the official email bit. This is like pre-email bit. Do you want the jingle?
We've got letters. Okay.
All right. Okay. Fine. There it is. There you go. Right.
Pre-mails. We've got.
Right. There you go. That's all you're getting. Right.
Pre-mails.
Pre-mails.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to start with.
That doesn't sound right.
No. We're going to start with Pete. Just a quick comment on Windows screen readers. I do use Narrator, especially for working with Windows systems, system apps like Settings, where it seems to read more. And I tend to use it interchangeably with NVDA for web browsing. JAWS is great for work, especially the OCR and text analyzer, but my use case at home just can't justify the cost. For editing text at home, I was using NVDA in the absence of JAWS. Narrator has, however, massively improved, and I have used it for a work day when I had to move PC and I didn't have my normal screen reader available. By the way, chocolate in the fridge or out? Both. Just give me the chocolate, says Pete.
Come on, Pete.
That's a good answer.
No, it's not either or here. It's simple as it has to be out of the fridge, in a cupboard. End of story.
I think we all agree it's and rather than either or, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. What? Sorry, hang on.
Steve's
trying to wrap my head around that. Yeah, exactly.
If there's some in the fridge and there's some in the cupboard, you don't have to restrict yourself.
No, I'm not restricting.
Once you've got through the ones in the fridge, then you can start on the cupboard. That's fine.
Anyway, I think the major point here is about Narrator. Let's get to that because, I've been using this for a couple of days. I didn't get to use it for the whole week. And I kind of thought it was... And the reason I didn't was actually because I thought if I start using this and I hate it, it's going to be a nuisance. It's going to get in the way. What is interesting is when I started using it, I actually forgot I was using it. And that's the biggest takeaway from it, basically, over the past couple of days. I've forgotten I'm using it versus using JAWS.
And is that so, because the core keystrokes are the same?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much, if you know JAWS, you can operate Narrator. And that's obviously what they've done. They've brought Narrator up the standard that allows you to, that gets you to that stage where you're able to use it in the same way. So if you've learned one, you can use the other, and it'll be the same for NVDA. But yeah, I've not hated it. I've actually quite enjoyed using it. It's been all right, and I still have it running on my machine just now. It is a little bit more sluggish than JAWS. That is probably to be expected.
JAWS is a third-party thing. It's got lots of scripts running in the background, and that is really what surprised me.
Be clear, though. When I'm talking about it being sluggish, I'm talking about going between applications. So if I'm going between, at the moment, for example, I've got Google Docs open in my laptop with our notes on it. And when I go back into Google Docs, say from Outlook or from another app, it will take time to catch up with itself. And sometimes it doesn't. I have to go back around again and Alt-Tab back in. But that could be a Google Docs thing because Google Docs seems to play by its own rules. And I find that quite irritating. But the good news is it does all work. I mean, everything on it works in exactly the same way. So it doesn't read any less or any more. In fact, in some ways, I would say it's more verbose in a really clear way. So, for example, one thing I like is that the information you get, when you get, for example, you know, these notifications you get telling you that you need to press Alt-N to go to the notifications area. Generally, JAWS will just read out that there's a notification and you have to press Alt-N to get there. But Narrator will actually tell you, it will actually say, and what I like is the plain English approach, and the notification says, and it tells you what it says. So it gives you some added information, I'd say in a more friendly, understandable way. But not in a basic sense, just in a, this is what's happening over here, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I really like that approach. So yeah, so far I'm liking this. In Outlook, it performs really well. When I type in a name, I don't know how you feel about this, but whenever I type a name into the to field on an email in Outlook, it'll pop up with options. And sometimes it'll read the options, sometimes it won't. Sometimes I have to tab or enter on a name just on hope that it's the right one, and then go back and check that it is the right name. Whereas with Narrator, it's read every single drop-down, every single pop-up that appears every time. So far, not slow at all. But this machine we have, this is an RNIB machine here. It's a fairly beefy machine. It's an i7 processor. It's got 32 gig of RAM in it. So it should be fast enough to run Narrator. But it is. It's performing well. I'd say in single app testing, going on just one app, so if you just stay with one app and stay within the confines of that app, I'm not finding much difference in terms of the speed of operation. The only difference I find is typing. Now, I tend to type not using characters and words, but just words. And it does tend to clip words as I'm typing. It's just not responding quickly enough on the spacebar the way that JAWS would. That could be a voice issue. It could be the voice itself that's the problem. Because I've had this issue with JAWS voices before. Sometimes the vocalizer expressive voices do that, where it can be just a bit less responsive than, say, eloquence. So if I was able to put eloquence onto this, and I know that's something that's coming in the future, or at least in the new update, which I don't have yet, then that might be that might solve that problem.
Yeah, I mean, Sappy, the speech API that is built into Windows and that Narrator uses to drive its voices, has got more responsive over the years. I think it's Sappy 5 we're up to now, but I don't think it's quite as responsive as non-Sappy engines that, you know, JAWS has its own kind of bespoke way. You know, a synthesizer would have to be built for JAWS or kind of ported over so that it's able to be used by JAWS users, for example. I'm not sure what NVDA uses. It might use Sappy as an interface, or it might have its own custom driver, but I've found that too. So there's just that little bit of a delay, and yeah, it might be the speech engine. I hadn't actually thought of that. So the arrowing up and down through email, different emails in your inbox in Outlook, for example. Now, I know Outlook is really chunky and, you know, performance isn't good with any screen reader. But I did find it was that little bit slower arrowing through lines when you've opened up an email. Again, a little bit slower than JAWS. Arrowing through words, ditto. You know, so, I mean, a little bit, I say, not unusable by any means. And isn't it brilliant that we're at the point now where, like you say, broadly speaking, in kind of day-to-day stuff, it's there or thereabouts.
I'm not noticing anything enough to make me want to turn it off.
Well,
that's
for me,
I am, and I'm surprised at that.
I use the scripts in JAWS a lot, and I know that we're kind of thinking that when it comes to free, we should probably be comparing NVDA and Narrator. I think that's the kind of right
choice.
Well,
I think people hear free and they think not very good. That's maybe the problem.
Or at least it's beyond that.
No,
page.
And we shouldn't think that. But I don't think it is that. I think, you know, I'm trying to be really positive here. I'm trying to be really positive about this because I think it's I mean, don't get me wrong. I hated Narrator for a long time. It was awful for a long time. No denial at all. But, you know, my question to you is, when did you last use it?
I did use it this week to see if 2004... I mean, we should probably briefly talk about the 2004 update in more broadly as well, because I think that it is more responsive. I think that if you update to 2004, you'll see a noticeable improvement in performance of your machine. I've found that anyway. Yeah. And so, you know, that's a win, and you definitely should think about doing that. The improvements of NVDA, of Narrator, are noticeable, as we've been talking about. So, you know, it's definitely worth upgrading. The one huge problem with it that comes with it is that Cortana now, and I don't know if you've managed to kind of get over this, seems to be popping up all over the place. So it's a separate app. It's now in my alt tab order. When I get on the window of it and she says, you know, you can type something in here or you can press this button to talk, you know, it's like a Siri or an A-Lady interface. If I hit Alt F4 on that, it goes and the focus goes back to another open application. But if I Alt-Tab around, she's back again, even if you tick the thing in her settings which says, don't open me on startup and reboot your computer. She's back. And we said, it said in the notes for the new Windows 2004, that because it's a separate one now, you can uninstall it. Guess what? There's nothing. There's no way you can uninstall it. I haven't found it yet. It's not in the list of apps on your computer for uninstalling. If you right-click on it in the start menu, there's no uninstall option. So there's some... If you are thinking about all these wonderful new Narrator benefits that we've been talking about, there at the moment anyway, there are some downsides to upgrading to 2004 too. So
yeah, I haven't got there yet because I haven't got that update, but when I do, I will be testing that. I also will be testing out voices on and changing the speech engine on Narrator. That might be the solution that most people are looking for if they're thinking it's sluggish. Because I get this from my friend Alan a lot, who does a morning show here. Well, obviously we've not been having that for a while, but Alan Russell, who does the morning show with us, he has had real problems with JAWS, and he'll say to me, the computer's slow. And I'm thinking, is it the computer's running slow, or is it just that the machine itself is running fine, it's just JAWS is running to catch up, and the machine he was using at the time was a very old machine. So, you know, sometimes it's not as obvious as you think. You think the machine is being slow, or you think Narrator is being sluggish, but actually there's some other factor going on there. Anyway, let's get on to some of the other emails. I also want to pick up on Pete's point later. I think this will come up again, but the point about home use versus professional use or business use. Let's get back to the emails, though, Andy, and look at our next one relating to this topic.
So the next one is Brian. Hi, I use Narrator most of the time. Occasionally, I use NVDA as a fallback. However, I find that for most basic tasks, email, text documents, using Microsoft Edge for the internet, I find Narrator works perfectly well. I have one program that I only use NVDA on, as Narrator doesn't seem to read all that I need. Narrator has come a long way over the last few years. I no longer have to fork out massive expense for JAWS, and I must add that JAWS was superb in the past when there wasn't any alternatives. So that's from Brian.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense, but I think it is that home use argument versus business use. I think if you're in a business environment, you do need to probably consider something like JAWS. You might not, depends on the job. Maybe an admin job doesn't require it, but then if you're using spreadsheets and you're starting to get into more technical documents, maybe you do. You know, I'm sure this conversation will go on and on this topic, whether or not it's one or the other. But I think for a home user who is essentially maybe surfing the web, who's sending emails, who's checking Facebook and Twitter on the computer, then I think Narrator is more than powerful enough to do that now. And I'm really sticking my neck out.
NVDA, certainly. You know, I'm a huge fan of NVDA.
You're so down on Narrator. You're so down on it. You've got to spend more time with it. You need to spend a week with it. I've spent 2 days and I'm loving it so far. I'm not noticing enough to make me want to turn it off. And that's I didn't expect that.
I think if we're not careful, though, because NVDA is so much more powerful than Narrator, that we're going to be making people who really appreciate the power of NVDA and how much work's gone into it, we're going to upset them because we're saying that, well, you
no,
know,
I'm not,
there's
I'm not
a
slamming
lot of
NVDA.
Difference between,
No.
Yeah, I mean,
no,
it's definitely better. So for home use, by all means, if you can get away with Narrator, like you say.
Hang on. I'm not talking about NVDA. I want to talk about Narrator. Because that's the point, you see. We keep coming back to, oh, Narrator's just a screen reader to get you to the other one. But actually, I don't know if it is anymore. I think it's more than that. And I'm not saying that NVDA is bad or JAWS is bad or anything. I'm just saying, we, you know, let's give this a try. Because we talk about NVDA, we talk about JAWS all the time. What about the very thing that's built into the system? You know, we've never had a second screen reader for a Mac, which, you know, bamboozles me to some degree. But, you know, it's obviously because VoiceOver does the job. And, you know, Narrator's not there yet, but I think it's getting close to it. And I just want to open up that conversation. I mean, yes, NVDA, I'm sure tons of people are going to come out and say, this is the best thing ever. And I get that. But what about Narrator? I'm not saying anybody should switch one off and use the other on my command. I don't have that power. I wish I did, but I don't.
I completely agree with you there. I just didn't want us to give that impression that, you know, NVDA is now, you know, null and void because Narrator's getting there.
Definitely not.
But totally, that's a really good approach. Start with what's built in. If it works for you, brilliant. If it doesn't, there's another really good free solution out there as well.
Right, let's talk about... Well, let's just get back to the emails, actually, and talk about what some other people have been saying.
We're going to continue on this theme with Shazad's email. Hi, everyone at Tech Talk. I am responding to one of your show presenters on how negative he was towards Narrator, as he used...
That's Robin.
Yeah, he used the horse analogy of being a donkey rather than a horse, as he was saying that JAWS and NVDA are better horses. Let me remind you that having a screen reader like Narrator is built-in free, rather than spending a large amount of money on JAWS and its software license agreement every time that there's a new update. And with NVDA, you have to continuously need to donate for it to carry on. And yet I feel that Mr. Christofferson was being very negative, also towards Google Chrome, as it does not take up much power, nor does it eat up much resources either. And it was far more easy to navigate around than it is using Microsoft Chrome. Chromium, I should say, which is what Edge is built on. I feel it is extremely power hungry, and it is also cluttered with navigating around its website, as I'm using Windows 10 home version, and I used to be a JAWS user, but now I am easily enjoying Narrator, as I've been confident that I've improve definitely in the future, as many people would want to have a free screen reader, as many people are now tightening their purse strings nowadays. We need to save money because people are losing their jobs, and therefore many blind people would want to have something for free and not pay for their screen reader. Once again, I enjoy the show immensely, but I would like you to slow down when you are demonstrating a product or service, when you're demonstrating the Easy Reader app on your phone, Stephen. So, Stephen, you have to slow down as well now. But anyway, yes, that's
my bad.
Shazad from Birmingham.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, that was my fault for calling it out. I was almost inviting people to agree with me there. Apologies.
When you joined this show, you were very quiet and calm, and you know, you just kind of rode along with it. And now you've turned into I don't know what's happened.
I apologise.
Sorry, Robin.
Actually, that's not right, is it? Just on Shahzad's the really good points that Shahzad made there. I think the only thing that I would want, that I'm sure he would want us to clarify, is that he says there about needing to continually donate to keep NVDA on the rails, and that's absolutely true. They do rely on donations from users, but I wouldn't want people to interpret what he said there as meaning that each person needs to continually donate for your copy to still work, if that makes sense. That isn't the case, as far as I know. So I wouldn't want people to come away thinking that, and I'm sure he didn't mean that to be.
It's
his.
A choice. You can
absolutely,
you can donate if you like,
do
but you don't
on
have
it, yeah.
to.
I mean, they get they grants as well. They do actually win a lot of grants from different bodies. It's very well recognized as being a valuable project, and they do a brilliant podcast as well, which explains where they're going, what they, I'm not sure if it's been out for a while actually, but you know, what their trajectory is, what new pots of money they've had recently, which means that they're now able to focus on X, Y, and Z. So it's a brilliant, brilliant project.
Yeah, I mean, we'll maybe do a deep dive at some point into NVDA in more detail. But, you know, staying on the narrator theme, we have some other emails. Will's been in touch as well on the emails, Andy.
Hi, Stephen, Andy and Robin. A very interesting show as usual, but I wanted to pick up on a few points. Chocolate doesn't go in the fridge, but rather in the cupboard. The snapping noise you get when chocolate has been in the fridge is nice, but the colder and harder it is, you'll end up breaking your teeth. My screen reader of choice when I need one is NVDA, but perhaps one reason to use Narrator is security. One argument that I've heard for not using antivirus programs on Windows, apart from when it comes built in, is that the more software that you install, the bigger your attack service. Given that third-party antivirus has to hook deep into Windows, any bugs in the program itself will pose a serious threat. The same might apply with JAWS or NVDA, I don't know. Even if that argument isn't valid, I'm not convinced it particularly is, then it doesn't let Microsoft off the hook so much, so they don't need to bother having one. I also heard Stephen say that £2,500 was a good price for that new HumanWare keyboard and braille display thing. I know it's a bit of a seller's market, but I thought that the Orbit was going for around £500. Can HumanWare really justify charging £2,000 more than that? Thanks. That's from Will. And he also says, wasn't it Steve Ballmer who called Linux a cancer, not Bill Gates?
I think he's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's apples and oranges with regards Orbit versus the L Braille, or no, the which one was it that he was talking about?
This is the Mantis Q40.
Yeah, so
HumanWare device.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, they're different beasts, aren't they? But at the same time, it's always going to be a considered purchase if you're looking at a Braille display, which has got sort
it's
of a
specialist.
Four-figure.
You know, specialist, and I think the thing about the Orbit is that the Orbit really did come crashing into this space because, you know, with the price point where it is, it has made it difficult for these companies like HumanWare, for other companies as well, Freedom Scientific as well, of Aspero, who sell the Focus 14 range and the Focus 40 and the Focus 80, if you want to go crazy and spend $8,000 on a real display. You know, it's harder to justify the costs, but at the same token, with mechanical switches being what they are and the way that the Braille displays operate, there is no other way at the moment to make it cheaper. Orbit was a slightly different design in the way they did it, and it was essentially a subsidized approach rather than being, a company who was out to make a product and sell that product. Orbit was a conglomerate of various charities and organisations from around the world who paid in to come up with the prototype, and now they sell that at a lower cost. And that was the design, that was the idea, that collaboration would create that result. But it's not something which I think other companies can get to yet. Until the technology becomes more affordable to make Braille displays. I sound like I'm justifying it. I'm trying not to. But at the same token, there is a reason why something costs $2,500 and one costs $500. And you know, there has to be a bit of context to understand that the reasons behind that. But yeah, I mean, can humanware justify it? Well, yes, they can. And they obviously can, and they are. But whether you can justify the cost, that's up to you. And that's the bottom line for all of us. But I think this will be a very positive thing for education, and that certainly is where it's aimed in the States anyway, and I'm sure the same will be here. This will be a classroom keyboard note taker, and also, you know, be able to connect up and give Braille access for, you know, using the computer in the classroom. Possibly it'll be the same for some businesses, and certainly access to work. Claimants will be looking for this, and that's where a lot of that will come from. For individuals, you know, for me, I think I might spend that money. I mean, I'm going to get one to demo. I'll have it for about a week and I'll give you my honest thoughts on it. I should receive that this week. And when I do, I'll be testing it to see what I think. If it's worth, you know, does it feel like it's worth £2,500? Is it functional enough? Will it do the jobs that I kind of want it to do? And then if the answer is yes, then of course I can justify it, because at that point it's justified itself. The need is there. So, yeah. You know, it's one of those ones. It's a difficult one, though, Robin, isn't it? Because, you know, it's so hard when you talk about these different devices. They're all so similar, but then the price differences are huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have had discussions around specialist versus mainstream. And, you know, the upgradability that we talked about last week as well, of a single unit versus, you know, different peripherals to a mainstream item like a phone, for example. So, but I think there's a place for all of them. I really do, because a single unit is something that is potentially more attractive for a school, where they're buying something and they can, you know, the very fact that it's a specialist item attracts, you know, VAT. Maybe ticks a box from a funding point of view that an iPad wouldn't say. So, you know, definitely, I think that's a really good point.
And it's more functional as well for a lot of people. I mean, you know, as much as iPads are great and all that, I think for low vision, that's fine. And you know, and I know a lot of low vision people use iPads and absolutely adore them. And I use an iPad, you use an iPad, Robin. I mean, yeah, they're great. But you still have an element of, if you're thinking about a time-sensitive environment like a classroom where you're working for an hour on a particular topic or a particular thing, you need to just get the work done. You don't have time to muck around and find your way to things. So having a device that is dedicated to that can make a difference, and being able to do it quietly as well. I mean, a lot of people don't like having a voice speaking to them all the time. And we've had this conversation on the show before, and it's possibly a conversation for the future again, to say, you know, are you the type of person who likes voice output, or do you prefer a mixture of voice and Braille output, which means you can actually have a conversation with someone instead of constantly doing what I do with Andy, and I do it with you, Robin, as well. I'll, you know, you'll constantly be talking about, hang on.
I'm very
wary.
Because
you're trying to hear the voice.
Yeah, I'm very wary that must get very frustrating for you, where I say something just at a normal conversation, but you're already listening to something, but I can't hear that, so I haven't picked up on that. So your screen reader or whatever it is trying to explain something to you, and then I'm going, oh, did you see that thing on Netflix last night? And that's just another voice in your head, as if you haven't got enough already.
The voices.
Well, that's added the six that are already there, yeah.
Just to get back to screen reader, because Will brings up security,
please.
There. He says one of the benefits of using Narrator is security. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
So I totally agree. First party can provide a lot more secure solutions where possible. And he's absolutely right that the footprint that a third party screen reader provides in Windows is very, very similar to a virus, because it has to have system level access. It has to scrape what's going on the screen. It has to log every keystroke. It has to intercept all of those. And keylogging software is a very popular or very common form of malware. And so
Yeah.
But both Freedom Scientific, or Vispero, and NVDA have had those conversations with Microsoft and are allowed through the firewall or whatever it is. So, but it's still an attack vector, because if people were able to crack open the source code of JAWS, for example, inject some malware into that, the next time you update JAWS, you've got that full system access. So it absolutely is increases the attack surface. It's a vector for invasion by malware and viruses, etc. So totally agree with him there. I'm sure that a narrator has, you know, the same system access. Well, it would have to, but it's part of the source code. Having said that, you know, there are many ways into the source code of Windows as well. Many different flaws and open doors there. And they, like Apple, have a bug bounty program. But yeah, I totally agree with Will there.
Yeah, nothing I'm going to add to that that would be of any sense. But I do want to get in one more email on this topic from Christine.
Hi guys, I listened to this week's podcast and I felt that I had to tell you my take on Narrator. I do have some sight and I've managed to use large text and magnification. However, I feel that it is time to learn a screen reader. I have looked at all the options. I feel JAWS is very expensive and is probably the premium screen reader, which I feel is good for people who use their computers a lot and also for work. Supernova is also expensive and can be frustrating when it won't work due to updates of Windows, and the support for that is only 5 days a week, Monday to Friday. NVDA is free and is a good option. However, I try and keep away from third-party software due to the software updates that can occur. I'm not too sure about support. I think it used to be email only, which is not much good if you can't use your computer. Therefore, I have chosen to learn Narrator. I know it doesn't come top of the list, but I feel that we should give it a chance. It has come a long way in the last year. I also like that it is built into Windows, so there should be no problems with software updates. Windows accessible support is fantastic. It's open 24/7. I also feel that I want to give Windows a chance to improve their accessibility section by using it and giving feedback. Because if we don't try and we don't use, then they won't feel committed to expand and improve it. However, my main workhorse is, as you mentioned, the iPad Pro. I just love Apple products for their accessibility, their fantastic support 24/7, and their training in store in the past. All the best, Christine.
Yeah, and Christine, you make such a good point there about Microsoft support, which, you know, I must admit, I didn't really tie that together, but it makes so much sense when you think about it. You've got, if you're using Narrator, you're able to contact Microsoft support, the disability desk, or you can get them through Be My Eyes as well, which is brilliant. And that's helped me out of a few scrapes. And that's the thing, with that support being available, and it is round the clock, you get so much of your information that you need, any issues you have, you can get resolved. And that's something you might not get with NVDA or even Freedom Scientific. So, yeah, good, really good point on that, Christine. Mm-hmm. Nothing to add then, Robin?
No.
Try to slaughter it again.
Really good points. Honestly, if I could wave a magic wand and have Narrator be as good as JAWS or even as good as NVDA, then brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. We would have potentially a more secure platform. Speaking out of the box. Oh, and by the way, when I upgraded to 2004, the big Windows, you know, upgrade, Narrator was there for me the whole time, reading my percentages, telling me what to do. It was brilliant. And you obviously won't get that with anything else.
The one thing I would love Narrator, JAWS, to have is a feature within NVDA. And I don't know why they haven't done this, but when you're monitoring a progress bar on NVDA, you get the beep, 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 you know, to give you the sense of, you know, the progress bar going up, that tone change. I wish JAWS and NVDA would have that. I wish the Mac would have it as well. It's such a simple thing, but it's so good. It's the best descriptor of a progress bar I've ever heard. And I don't know why the others don't do it. Why can't we just steal that and put it into another application? Is that against the rules? Probably.
Who knows? But sometimes when that progress bar gets to the right-hand side, it starts on the left again. So sometimes it's a full...
It can get a bit confusing, yeah, yeah. But it is a good feature. Okay, well, listen, thank you so much for all your emails on Narrator, and do keep them coming as well, because, you know, we want to continue this conversation. And, you know, let's talk about NVDA as well. Let's not leave it out in the cold. It is a brilliant screen reader, of course it is. But, you know, I just really wanted to focus in this week on Narrator. So thank you for your emails, and thank you for your comments. Now time for this.
News from the internet.
I'm just throwing this one in because I want to talk a little bit about Apple and the new MacBooks that are coming out. So you've heard about this, Robin. They're bringing out, apparently, and it may appear at WWDC on June 22nd, MacBooks with ARM processors.
This is massive.
Yeah,
this is
it is. Can you explain what that means to anybody who doesn't know, like me?
Yeah, so ARM, ARM, I think it stands for Advanced Research Machines, but anyway, it's the architecture of the processor, which is different from Intel and their, you know, Pentium Golds and stuff like that. Most PCs, the vast majority, have Intel chips in them, and macOS is no exception. They run on that architecture, have done for a very long time, up before it was PowerPC, I think. So it's really all pervasive, but this is really for desktops, and they're very power hungry, and they run hot, which can dictate how slim the PC can be if it's in laptop form, you know, how much vents there have to be, and fans, and they take up power as well, etc., etc. Contrast that with a smartphone or an iPad, which can run hot sometimes, but is very snappy compared to a desktop machine. You know, there's no waiting, is there, with modern iOS devices, and I'm sure Android too, although they run on Qualcomm, but that's still a mobile processor architecture, very different from Intel. Much, much lower power consumption, much better battery life, and equal performance, in some cases much faster. So if you look at something like the A13X, it has much better benchmarks than the very high-end Intel processors that are in these big Mac Pros and stuff. So, you know, we're talking about wins all around in performance, in battery life, in thermals, etc. So what would it mean if the Mac was able to run on ARM? Well, it means that they've been busy rebuilding macOS from the ground up. This isn't some sort of emulation that you're going to be running in. It's not like having a layer that would abstract the operating system away from the chip, from the silicon. It's going to be natively running on ARM, and this means that macOS is going to be massively faster than it is at the moment on Intel, and as I say, it's going to use much less battery life, etc. Potentially you're going to be seeing laptops come out that are much thinner, won't have any fans, will have much better battery life, etc. And where certain programs are really quite legacy, then I would imagine that there would be some sort of abstraction layer, some emulation going on, but we wouldn't know that. A bit like with Catalina at the moment, these Catalyst apps are basically running iOS apps quite happily and, you know, with good performance on macOS. So I think after they announce this at WWDC this month, and the machines come out later this year, we're going to look back at the age of PCs before then and think, blimey, you know, they used to take whole seconds to turn on when we opened up the lid or when we, you know, pressed the space bar to wake them up. They had to have all these crazy power nap settings and, you know, shut down the display after a certain amount of time. I mean, that still will happen because they want to optimize the battery life. But it's going to feel like night and day compared to, I mean, ARM is the future, a much, much smaller die, you know, much smaller chip at the sort of 5 to 7 nanometer range. They're even fabbing stuff at 3 nanometers now. And Intel are up at the 11 and 14, which is, you know, small means quick, less distance for the electrons to travel, much less power consumption, much less heat, all that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think it's massive. there's been a lot of questions as to what it'll mean to run really high-end apps like Adobe Audition that you use and Photoshop. And
that's the problem.
Yeah,
that's
but I think it's going to be fine. I think it's going to be fine because...
Take my money.
Yeah, it's going to be...
No, but look, I mean, this is a fair point, right? Because the performance aspect here is a big one because at the moment, we've seen this already come to life in the form of the Microsoft Surface Pro X. So Microsoft brought out this Surface Pro X model. It is a tablet, but it is also, it can be a bit like the iPad Pro. It can also be, paired up with a keyboard and a trackpad and all that stuff. So it essentially becomes and is a Microsoft computer, but it runs with this ARM processor. And for some, a lot of apps they wanted to run, 32-bit apps in particular, just don't work on it. Or they work on some kind of level of emulation and they don't work very well. So when you're trying to do high-end tasks, it's clear the machine is not up to the job. Now, it's interesting because if you contrast all this with what's been seen through the iPad Pro is a very swift machine. Mm-hmm. You can do amazing tasks with it. So, you know, I do have more optimism on the Mac side than I would on the Windows side. That's probably where I am. And I think it's one of those things, we often say it, but when Apple do it, it tends to get done right. And I think that's probably where we are here. I think you're right. I think that it'll be that these machines will come out initially. They will be excellent for education. They will be brilliant for everyday tasks. They will be the Mac that most people will want to buy. And in terms of size, in terms of style, it's going to be a gorgeous machine. And it will be very functional. And I don't worry about accessibility on it. I genuinely don't. I think that that's one thing that on the Windows side, I had a conversation with someone at Microsoft. I obviously won't say who, but someone who did advise me to avoid the Surface Pro X for that reason. If I want to run something like JAWS on it, just forget it. That's not very comforting from their perspective. But that's something which will no doubt change in time. But I think Apple will get it out of the gate a lot better than that. So, yeah, I just wanted to mention it this week because I think it's really interesting. And they're not due to come out anytime soon. It's probably going to be next year. And, of course, with coronavirus and everything else, everything's been delayed and pushed back. They may have brought them out this year had it not been for coronavirus. But at the moment, the work kind of goes on to get the supply chains in place so that they can make this available. There's also talk of a new design of an iMac as well. It's about time the iMac had a bit of a refresh because it's been... I mean, the one thing about the iMac that really irritates me is you still get those physical horrible hard drives in them that are, you know, still spinning disks, no solid state.
Which is bizarre.
Well, you can if you spend more money, right? Always the same, but you can spend more money on it and you can get the solid-state drive versus the spinning one. But it should just be standard. Even the Mac Mini's got there. So, you know, it's about time that was updated.
Yep. The entry level, having a spinning disk, even if it's in a Fusion with an SSD.
It's slow.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to get rid of mine. I got one maybe 2 years ago, and I just sent it right back. I could not handle it. It was horrible to use. And you just know right away when it's got a spinning disk in it, you know, the difference. My wife has a computer, an HP, a Pavilion computer that she uses that's got a spinning disk. And I say to her constantly, I don't know how you can handle this thing. She asked me to update it, and I just want to scream. So, yeah. But anyway, that aside, let's get back to the emails. Right, Andy, we've had a look at some of the emails today, but let's have a look at some of the more general conversations and comments that have been coming in.
So this one from Michael starts, "Hi, Stephen, thanks for the demo of Easy Reader. To be honest with you, I'm struggling with it, and I have been for ages now. I can get as far as the reading services page, and then it will not accept my username and password for the site. When I go to the reading services site on my PC, I have no trouble, and I'm managing to find and download books without any problems. Any suggestions? Other than jumping on the phone, too expensive to be doing that," says Michael.
Okay, well, I was wondering, when you mentioned in that, you had talked about the Dolphin Easy Reader, and then you mentioned reading services. So I got a bit confused regarding whether you were talking about the website on a phone or the actual app itself. But Robin, you think it is definitely the app
talking about? Yeah, so when you go to the top menu in the Easy Reader app on your phone, for example, then go down to RNIB Reading Services, you get taken to a page where you log in. And that's a one-time thing, although it might ask you periodically, but you know, you certainly don't have to do it each time. And that form should take exactly the same credentials as your website. And he's saying that it doesn't work for him. And I can't tell you why that is the case, except to be super careful of case sensitivity. And, you know, putting it in on that on-screen keyboard might be trickier than...
Making sure as well that you've, assuming it's an iPhone, and I think it would be the same on Android, you would have to double tap on the form field to make sure that you're actually in the box. Because if you aren't, if it's not, I don't think the iPhone would grab focus onto that right away. You'd have to double tap into the form field to make sure. Otherwise, you're just typing into the air, really. It's not going anywhere.
I don't think you'd get a keyboard up if you weren't in there. But yeah.
Yeah. Although you could have your keyboard. Well, no, no. Sometimes the keyboard doesn't always disappear.
Maybe.
I don't know. Okay. Well, you know, again, tell us, Rich, what you're using, because that might be a good place to start. And we can maybe test it here as well. Okay. Let's go to our next email.
That was from Michael, by the way, not Rich.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Because this next one's from Reg.
I'm ahead of myself. This is me using my notes. You see, this is the problem when you use your notes. It's
dangerous, isn't it?
Preparation has gone all wrong. Yeah, sorry, Michael. Yes, this one's from Reg.
I'm a relatively new listener to the show. I found it via Robin's reference on another podcast recently.
That's right. Commission.
I'm currently using a new PC running Windows 10 with JAWS 2019. I would like to set up a wireless headset with it. I've tried a number of wireless and Bluetooth headsets. They all seem to chop the sound and sometimes go quiet when starting from a period of silence. It seems that many of these are not designed for speech and for screen readers. I assume it's due to their energy saving mode or some kind of Bluetooth setting. Some of these headsets do not have the option to disable energy saving mode, but it does drain the battery life. I was told to play silent music on loop in the background to keep the sound going. In the end, I'm going to use a cheap, under £10 wired headphones instead. In comparison, the Apple AirPods, both Pro and regular, with my iPhone, have never had this problem, so I know that it is possible. And given your range of experiences, my questions. One, do you know if AirPods perform as well with a PC? Have you either of you tested them? Two, what headsets, or wired or otherwise, would you or do you use? And three, what wireless headset would you recommend? As blind users, regular tests online are not really focused on us. I don't know where to ask or to check. So yeah, that's from Reg.
Okay, Reg. Well, here's my tuppence worth on this one. AirPods, don't bother. On the PC, it's never really been that great. But that's primarily because of the same issues you're having. It has that thing where you're going through the text on a document or something. If you take your hands off the keyboard for a couple of seconds and you hit the down arrow again, it cuts off the first part of the first word it says. And that, you're absolutely right, is because it's sending the sound driver, I guess, to sleep, or the Bluetooth low energy is in operation here. Whatever it is, it's just a pain in the neck. Yeah, it's a sound card. It is just really annoying. So there are some ways around this. And we found this, Robin, didn't we? Because I had a similar problem when I was setting up my virtual machine on my Mac. Mm-hmm. And this, bizarrely, might sound like a long way around to your answer, but it is the way we found this out, that exactly the same thing was happening on my VM. Even though I was on the Mac, I was never having a problem on the Mac side, but on the Windows side, it was always doing this, and it was chopping the audio. It was terrible. And then we found this little program, courtesy of Jonathan Mosen and his Mosen blog, that we had read this in his article, of a little program, a little application called Silenzio.
Yep.
And Silenzio has solved all of my problems. It is amazing. Because ultimately, what it does is exactly what has been suggested to you. It plays silence on a loop. But it does it without you having to do anything. The program can run at startup. Once it's operational, you don't even need to worry about it ever again. It just is always there. Little update, though, for you. If you're a JAWS user, there is a new feature coming to JAWS, which actually, it looks like, has built this Silenzio in. Am I right in saying that, Robin?
Yeah, it will play silence permanently while JAWS is running. Yeah.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, if you use JAWS, but otherwise get Silenzio.
So, yeah, if you don't use JAWS, then that gives you the other option. So that's definitely worth checking out.
From my point of view, I think there's two potential sources of lag here. With wireless, there will always be a delay. And with iOS and AirPods, that's the shortest it's ever going to be, to the point that you probably don't notice any lag when you're flicking around on your iPhone screen with your AirPods, either standard or pro in. They've really got that down to a minimum. If you then move to the Mac, say, it's quite noticeable. So we talked a moment ago about, desktop OSs being really very chunky and slow compared to mobile. And maybe with the switch over to ARM, that'll improve. The rewrite from the ground up may well improve as well of Mac OS. They're probably using Swift, I would have thought. I would hope anyway. But I think that that's going to be a much more efficient scenario. So maybe wireless on a Mac going forward will be possible. I'm certainly not. I'm wired while I'm talking to you here, because then there's zero delay built in to the, getting the sound to your ears. And on the PC, because AirPods haven't got the same ecosystem, I think they're going to be as laggy as most high-end Bluetooth headsets, which is relatively laggy.
Yeah.
Now, if you go below, I don't know, 50 or even perhaps £100, the lag in a Bluetooth headset is very noticeable. So I think that would make it almost unusable. So if you've got two things, if you've got a Windows PC where the sound card is literally going to sleep every 5 seconds of disuse, and that has a 50 millisecond delay in firing up, and then once it's sent the words to the Bluetooth headset, you've got another 50 or 100 milliseconds, that's going to be really bad. So yeah, wired all the way.
Can I just say as well, just before we go, because we're literally at the end of the show, just a quick point on this. I use a single ear headset that I got, and I bought it as a PlayStation 4, Sony PlayStation 4 single ear headset. And if you look online for that, that is all it is. It's just a single ear with a microphone, and it plugs straight into your port. If you've got that single port that does both the microphone and the headphone, that's a really good option. I use that all the time. So that's good. If you are desperate for wireless, then what I would suggest is look for headsets that are USB wireless, not Bluetooth wireless, because I've had good results with those. That's probably the best experience I've had with a PC. I used a Logitech set, and I can't remember or even tell you what the code of them were, but I think they cost me like £40, and they were Logitech headphones with a little microphone that sticks out, and a little USB thing that you just plug into the computer. And once you plug that in, it all just worked, and it was all very nice. So there you go. Anyway, look, we're out of time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your emails. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'll catch you next time, guys.
Thanks, guys.